So Maharaj Prickett has asked questions concerning about what he has just heard. How is it possible that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who advents himself to protect Dharma, yada yada dharmasya glani or bhavati bharata, how could he set such a poor example? How could he dance with the wives of others in the middle of the night? How could he do something so adharmic, something so contemptible? And he's the Supreme Lord. So, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in his comment on 26-27, he says, Maharaj Prickett detected many karmis and jnanis in that assembly who are harboring doubts about Krishna's activities because they're in their own hearts were contaminated by mundane desires. Therefore, he asked the question, in order to establish Dharma and destroy Adharma, Swayam Bhagavan Krishna appears, whose expansion is Vishnu. Or Swayam Bhagavan means has appeared with his own Ansena Balaram. How then can Krishna perform acts contrary to Dharma? If you say that Krishna can act contrary to Dharma because he's the independent Lord, he's the Ishwara, then he should also accept the sinful reactions, just as he sometimes gets cursed and accepts the results. And then, more to the doubt in his purport to 28. If you argue that for the Supreme Lord there is no adharma, irreligion, then why would he perform such abominable acts? One can answer that he does so to fulfill his desires. But because he is up to come, because his desires are already fulfilled, that answer isn't sufficient. Sukadeva might reply, but in this avatar, Krishna must do these condemned activities. Maharaj Prickett, then how could Krishna be the head of the Yadus who follow the highest Dharma? This is not only our doubt, but the doubt of many people. See, Krishna is up to come and up Narama, Admarama, yet he enjoyed enthusiastically with the gopis, who were the very form of prema and bliss. This is a very deep concept, so naturally people have doubts. You yourself are totally committed to proper conduct. Still, you have become fully absorbed in Krishna's pastimes, portraying such condemned behavior. This too creates another doubt. So this has also made us doubt you. Because you're fully absorbed, thinking that this is a wonderful pastime, and yet it appears to be inappropriate. So does that mean you're absorbed in something material? So one doubt leads to another also. So Sukadeva Goswami, he replies in the next 12 verses, I think it's 12 or 9, 29, I think it's 39, so it's 11 or 10, 11. The first thing he says is very powerful. Not that so many of the things he says are powerful and very instructive too. But this first one is extremely powerful. Sukadeva Uvacha, Dharma Vyati Kromo Drishta Ishwaram Chasahasam Tejasam Na Doshaya Vani Sarva Bujo Yata. Sukadeva Goswami says, so that means Dharma Vyati Kromo. That means going against. Vyati Kromo means the opposite of Dharma. So the transgressions of religious or moral principles. Drishta Ishwaranam. When that is seen, going the opposite of Dharma is seen in the Ishwaras, the controllers, the supreme controller, or powerful personalities, Tejasam, Ishwaram Sahasam, due to their apparent audacity, just whimsicalness, doing whatever they want, just challenging religious principles and going the opposite, when that is Tejasam, those who are spiritually potent, Na doshaya, dosha means, of course, faults. So when an Ishwara, an extremely powerful person, out of their desire or whim or audacity, goes completely against the religious principles, there is no fault in that. Vane sava bujo yata. That's like a fire devours what is ever put into it. So here's the translation. The status of powerful controllers is not harmed by any apparent audacious transgression of morality we may see in them. For they are just like fire, which devours everything fed into it and remains unpolluted. No atonement is required because they are like fire. They turn everything into, or they remove the impurities of everything just by they're the ones who are doing it. Vishwanath comments, short comment. Though the demigods sometimes perform irreligious activities, they do not get reactions for them. What then to speak of the Supreme Lord? Sukadev Goswami answers Maharaj Prickett's first question in 6 verses. Though powerful controllers such as Shiva commit immoral or religious acts out of rashness, they do not need to atone for their acts. Text 30. But, here's the but, one who is not a great controller, Anishwara, one who is not an Ishwara, So there is a tendency of the materialistic mind to think, me too, why not? Which means that if the powerful Ishwaras can do whatever they want, well, me too, why not? Why can't I do it? And sort of really think in a gray way, because no one wants to admit or say, well, I'm not really a powerful Ishwara, because this is the nature of false ego. Everyone cuts off a piece of the universe in that he wants to call his own, that he wants to be the powerful Ishwara of. So somehow or another, by faulty logic, we'll tend to place ourselves in those category, in the category of an Ishwara. And say, and then imitate. So he says that one who is not naitad samak chale jatu manishapi hi anishwara, one who is not a great controller. So we have, that's the first point, to understand, are we powerful controllers? How many powerful controllers really are there? And not and on the level of demigods, not on the level of someone controlling something small in this world. Because in the realm, just like if there's a boss in a factory, there's a factory next door to where I stay in Brajabhisari's house, and I saw that the workers, when they're walking out, they have a guard and they check the guard, because I think they do some kind of silver plating or something like that. So they check the guard. The guard checks all the workers to see if they're stealing any silver. So the Ishwara of that little factory, when he walks out, he's allowed to, the controller, the owner of the factory, he can take all the silver he wants. The guards aren't going to check him, and they're not going to tell him, Hare Krishna. They're not going to tell him, Hom Hoa. You like to come in? No. Perhaps not so much English. Oh, they're the yoga students. From where? Shanghai or something, or from somewhere in the mainland. So the controller, the owner of that factory, he doesn't have to, he can transgress anything. He's not stained by his transgressions. He can walk in there, he can break all the machinery, he can turn everything upside down, he can put a big hole in the wall, he can steal every ounce of silver that's there, and well, it's his factory. So it's something like that with the controllers within their realm. in my house, or even Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. One day he became very upset, and he broke every single thing in his house, including the door. He broke down the door, and his mother tried to pacify him and say, "Son, you are breaking your own things." So what is not the own things of the Supreme Lord? In fact, the Supreme Lord of all existence, Krishna. So there's actually no fault. No fault. So Sukadev tells us that we should not imitate. If we are not actually the Ishwara of a realm, we shouldn't imitate it. Well, I see that the owner of the shop is walking out with silver, so if he can do it, why can't I? Well, what's going to happen to me? I'll end up in a great problem and great difficulty having to face reactions for what I've done. So therefore, Sukadev says, the status, one who is not a great controller should never imitate. It's a warning. Should never imitate the behavior of ruling personalities, even mentally. If out of foolishness, so there's the conditional phrase, if out of foolishness one says, "Well, I can be an Ishwara, if he can do it, why can't I? Because this is the nature of false ego. If he can do it, why can't I? I want to do it, so therefore I should do it, and therefore I will do it. No one can tell me I can't do something." This is foolish, false ego. If out of foolishness an ordinary person does imitate such behavior without actually having the qualification, he will simply destroy himself. That is the result of imitation. Just as a person who is not Rudra would destroy himself if he tried to drink an ocean of poison. So not even mentally should we imitate the Parameshwara, Krishna. Another important point here. Ishwaram vacha satyam. The Ishwara, the translated here is the Lord's empowered servants, vacha, their words are satyam, they are true. The words of the Ishwaras are true. Tataiva acharitam kvachit, but sometimes they have their words, and sometimes acharitam, what they do contradicts what they say of the Ishwara. So what do we do in those cases? Okay, we shouldn't imitate the activities, okay. And sometimes they're telling us what to do, the Ishwaras, we should do this. But what happens if their activities and their words go in opposite directions? This sometimes happens. What should we do? How should we take that? We tend to want to go in the opposite direction. We want to do what we want to do. And if we get an excuse by this, the contradiction between the words and the behavior, we'll tend to take the behavior over the instructions because that's what we wanted to do anyway. So, tesham yat sva vacho yuktam buddhimam tat samacharam. But one who is intelligent, one who is buddhimam, what should he do? He should just take the instructions. He should follow the instructions. If a contradiction appears, here's the translation. The statements of the Lord's empowered servants are always true, and the acts they perform are exemplary when consistent with those statements. That's the example. When the statements are there, and the statements are based on Shastra, and their words follow Shastra, and generally their acts are consistent with their statements and therefore consistent with Shastra. But if the situation occurs, when they act in such a way that is inconsistent with their statements, who is intelligent, should carry out their instructions, should listen to their words. They are based also on Shastra. We'll just read the last three paragraphs to the purport, quoting Śrīla Bhakti Siddhānta Saraswati Thakura. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur has translated the word Ishwaranam as those who have become powerful through knowledge and austerity. As one understands the nature and will of God and makes the personal sacrifice required to achieve excellence in spiritual life, one becomes empowered by the Supreme Lord to represent His will, which one has intelligently recognized and accepted. This is 31. The Supreme Personality of Godhead kindly descends to earth to show a vivid example of religious behavior. And indeed, Krishna's activities are religious, as are the gopis. It describes later on in the Bhagavatam, in later chapters, earlier chapters, when Mother Yasoda, when Krishna was very, very, wouldn't come home, and it was time for him to come home and take prasadam. First, Mother Yasoda sent Rohini Devi to call him, and Krishna wouldn't come because he was afraid that the boys would reject him from playing. They threatened him in that way. Then Mother Yasoda came herself, and she said that today is your birthday, my dear Krishna. And she was speaking very, very softly and very carefully to him because she was afraid if she said, Krishna, come home, he would just run away. He was such an active and naughty boy. And then she said, today is your birthday. And on your birthday, you should give charity to the Brahmins. And Krishna was so religiously minded. This was one of his favorite activities, to give charity to the Brahmins. So as soon as he heard, oh, it's my birthday, I'm supposed to give charity, he stopped for a moment and turned. And then Mother Yasoda, as she walked even closer, said, and your father, Nanda Maharaj, is waiting for you to eat. And he won't take prasadam until you're there. And she caught him. And okay, let's go back. Actually, it wasn't his birthday. But Mother Yasoda, when she got back, she held a separate, she held a whole ceremony and had a sacrifice. Just so that Krishna would be satisfied that and not call her someone who didn't speak the truth. And the gopis were so religious, Krishna had to drive them mad practically with his flute sound before he could attract them from their homes. As Lord Krishna states in the Bhagavad Gita, if I did not execute standard duties, the whole world would be misled and in fact destroyed. Thus the Lord showed in his different incarnations how to act properly in this world. A good example is Lord Ram, who behaved wonderfully as the son of King Dasarath. But when Krishna himself descends, he also demonstrates the ultimate religious principle, namely that the Supreme Lord is beyond all other living beings and no one can imitate his supreme position. This foremost of all religious principles, that the Lord is unique, without equal, without superior, was clearly demonstrated in Lord Krishna's apparent immoral pastimes with the gopis. No one can imitate these activities, which occurred without incurring dire, serious consequences, as explained here by Sukadeva Goswami. One who thinks that Lord Krishna is an ordinary living being, subjected to lust, or who accepts his rasa dance as admirable and tries to imitate it, will certainly be vanquished, as described in text 30 of this chapter. Finally, a distinction must be made between the Lord and his empowered servants. An empowered servant of the Lord, as in the case of Brahma, may experience a remnant of reactions to previous activities according to the law of karma. But the Lord is eternally free from any entanglements in the law of karma. He is on a unique platform. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has commented to 31. Maharaj Prickett said, all right, then when do we apply the rule that whatever a great man does, others should follow? Sukadeva Goswami replied, the instructions of the demigods or great personalities are always auspicious for the devotees to follow.
When the Lord performs pastimes as Ram, one should follow his instructions. One should perform only those acts which do not contradict the orders given by the demigods or great persons. But even those instructions must be approved by Shastra, by scriptures. Then one can act. Otherwise not. An intelligent person should conduct himself in this way. In other words, the Shastra is the mediating principle. Krishna ordered Arjuna to kill Aswatthama. This is actually a wonderful reconciliation of that difficult to understand part of Bhagavatam in the seventh chapter of the first canto. Krishna ordered Arjuna to kill Aswatthama, who had killed Arjuna's sleeping children in the night. Bhagavatam 1.7.35. Arjuna, however, did not follow Krishna's instructions to kill Aswatthama, because elsewhere Krishna said a brahmana should never be killed even if he's sinful. Another instruction is that one should kill a person armed to kill others. Though acting as a kshatriya, Aswatthama was still a brahmana and he was not armed to kill. Therefore, according to the scriptural injunctions, he should not have been killed. Krishna was actually testing Arjuna's knowledge of religious principles by ordering him to kill Aswatthama. Wonderful explanation of that by Śrīla Vaiṣṇava Chakravarti Thakur. 32. My dear Prabhu, when these great persons who are freed from false ego act piously in this world, they have no selfish motives to fulfill. And even when they act in apparent contradiction to the law of piety, they are not subject to sinful reaction. They are powerful persons. Do not automatically assume you're in that position. How then could the Lord of all created beings, animals, men, and demigods, have any connection with piety and impiety that affects his subject creatures? Now, Krishna is the Supreme Lord. He doesn't have anything to do with piety and the laws of piety and impiety of pap and punya. He is the creator of those laws. He's above them. Those laws affect just the subjects within his kingdom, the subject creatures. They don't touch him at all. And everything he does, again, is beyond, completely beyond these things. His motivations are completely different from those who are circumscribed by the bars of the laws, the stringent laws of material nature. So therefore, as the purport here says, his activities which he performs out of his own pure goodness, not tinged by passion or ignorance or even the material mode of goodness, are never subject to criticism by ordinary living beings. Why? Because they have no idea of what is going on in his consciousness. Just like a surgeon cutting a person with a knife to save his life, and a young foolish child who's been told by his parents that you should not cut anyone with a knife, he's criticizing the surgeon. Of course, he has no knowledge. He has no understanding of what's in the goodness that's in the surgeon's consciousness. He can't tell, due to his immaturity, what that adult is thinking. He has no access to it, in fact. So similarly, because we don't have access to the Ishwaranam, to their consciousness, what to speak of the Param Ishwara consciousness, we should just take the words, how they are meant and who they are meant for, and they are meant for us, and basically we should mind our own business and follow Shastra and not say, well, he's doing this, and therefore, then it's mind our own business. We should know what we should do, and we should do that. We should know that we are not controllers. We are not controlling the sunrise and the sunset and the seasons and the spring, what to speak of countless universes that Krishna's. We should basically know that we are tiny, controlled, insignificant living entities, and we should follow what is good for us. Otherwise, we will get ourselves into great trouble. 34. Material activities, another argument why Krishna's activities aren't inappropriate. Material activities never entangle the devotees of the Supreme Lord, who are fully satisfied by serving the dust of his lotus feet. Nor do material activities entangle those intelligent sages who have freed themselves from the bondage of all fruitive reactions by the power of yoga. So the material reactions and karma do not bind either the devotees, meaning the real devotees, who are satisfied fully serving the lotus feet of the Lord. That is actually what it means to be a devotee. One who has taken full shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord and his service and is experiencing the sweetness and the satisfaction that comes from interacting in relationship with the Lord. So either the devotees or even the yogis who by the power of their yoga have liberated themselves, they are not tinged or touched by material reactions. So therefore, and then he says, So how, therefore, could there be any question of bondage by the Lord himself, who assumes his transcendental forms according to his own sweet will? Sambhavam yapma mayaya. He is not even tinged or touched or controlled in the slightest bit, in the most insignificant way, by the material energy. He is not actually an incarnation. He has not assumed the coils of flesh. He is an avatar. He descends, but he doesn't actually even descend into this material world. He never touches the material world. Neither he nor any of his expansions ever touch the material world or the expansions of his expansions. When they descend, they allow us to see him as he plays in this world with his lotus, full lotus countenance. He appears to be here, but he's not. So Krishna appears to be dancing with the wife of others from the point of view of rasa, but unless one is fixed in tattva, the philosophical truths as they are, mixing both, knowing both, firmly fixed in tattva, one will misunderstand and one will tend to imitate. So if the Lord's devotees and the yogis are in touch by karma or reactions or not really in the material world in that sense, how is the Lord of those people, of those souls, how could he not be beyond? He's their worshipable object. He who lives, this is 35, as the overseeing witness within the gopis and their husbands, and indeed within all embodied living beings, assumes forms in this world to enjoy transcendental pastimes. We'll read just the final paragraph of this purport. Since Lord Krishna is the Supreme Lord dwelling within the gopis, so he's in the hearts of the gopis, one could say, what is he doing within the hearts of the wives of others? He's not allowed to be there. Their so-called husbands also, he's also in their hearts, and all other living beings. What possible sin could there be on his part if he embraces some of the beings he himself has created? What fault could there be if the Lord goes with the gopis to a secret place, since he already dwells within the most secret part of every living being, the core of the heart? The comment of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur to 35, or part of the comment. After considering that Krishna had no fault in embracing others' wives, this verse points out that there is no one superior to Krishna who pervades every inch of creation. 36.
When the Lord assumes a human-like body to show mercy to his devotees, and this point is very clearly why Krishna is dancing with the Braja Gopikas, and why does he act the way he does? This is very, very wonderfully described in Prabhupada's purports towards the end of chapter 11 in the first canto, which describes Krishna's entering into Dwarka and assuming and reacting with his queens, the queens of Dwarka, as he enters their homes, the palaces, and he interacts with them in wonderful ways. And Prabhupada's purports describe that Krishna is reciprocating with his devotees. They want to love him in this way, and Krishna becomes the most perfect husband in that case. And here, he becomes the most perfect of lovers to reciprocate with the transcendental full prema of the Braja Gopis. When the Lord assumes a human body to show mercy to his devotees, he engages in such pastimes as will attract those who hear about them to become dedicated to him. So Krishna can act so wonderfully. Here's the purport. And that attracts the conditioned souls, because he's the most wonderful actor. He is the greatest of heroes. Purport. Srila Jiva Goswami explains in this connection that when Lord Krishna descends to this world in his original two-handed form, out of kindness he manifests that form in a way his devotees conditioned in human society can perceive and understand. That is, again, what avatar means. Thus here it is stated, Manushyam Deham Astita. He assumes a human-like body. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura glorifies the Lord's conjugal pastime, stating that these romantic affairs have an inconceivable spiritual potency to attract the polluted heart of conditioned souls. It is an undeniable fact that any pure or simple-hearted person who hears the narrations of the loving affairs of Krishna will be attracted to the lotus feet of the Lord and gradually will become his devotee. So this point will be concluded in the final verse in this chapter, in a very wonderful verse spoken by Srila Sukadeva Goswami that also really responds to the point that you're absorbed, Sukadev, you're supposed to be the most perfected brahmachari, and you're absorbed in these, hearing about these dealings between Krishna dancing with women at night, so therefore we're distrusting your character. These type of thoughts may have been in the minds and the consciousness of these of some of the persons who are unqualified to hear these the Bhagavatam. And Sukadeva in the final verse of this chapter is going to answer that very, very powerfully, incredibly powerfully actually, which, and the hint of it is here in the verse in the purport, and then we're going to discuss that point because it's quite an interesting point. So the purport, and then we'll read Vishnu Chakravati Thakura. The cowherd men, bewildered by Krishna's illusory potency, thought their wives had remained home at their sides. Thus they did not harbor any jealous feelings against him. Purport. Because the gopis loved Krishna exclusively, Yogamaya protected their relationship with the Lord at all times, even though they were married. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura quotes from the Ujjana Nilamani as follows: Maya kalpita tadikstri silenanu suyabhi najatu braja devinam prativi saha sangama. The gopis' jealous husbands consorted not with their wives, but with doubles manufactured by Maya. Thus these men never actually had any intimate contact with the divine ladies of Braja. The gopis are the eternal internal energy of the Lord and can never belong to any other living being.
Krishna arranged their apparent marriage to other men simply to create the excitement of Parikya Ras, the love between a married woman and her paramour. These activities are absolutely pure because they are the Lord's pastimes, and saintly persons since time immemorial have relished these supreme spiritual events. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. We'll read his comment and then we shall discuss that a little bit. Anticipating, Maharaj Parikshit might ask, when Krishna enjoyed with the gopis every night of the year, how is it that their husbands, not seeing their wives at home, did not become angry with Krishna? Sukadeva Goswami replied in this verse, everything was perfectly arranged by Krishna's internal potency of Yoga Maya, not his external Mahamaya potency. Please listen carefully. Mahamaya has no jurisdiction over the intimate devotees of Sri Krishna. Those bewildered by Mahamaya are all opposed to the Lord, whereas the gopis of Braja had not a particle of opposition to the Lord. Therefore, Yogamaya created as many exact replicas, duplicate, doubles of the gopis as there were gopis who went to meet Krishna for the rasa dance and showed these to the cowherd men. Thus the cowherd men thought that their wives were by their sides. And then Ujjana Lamani states that that's the verse that's quoted. The replicas of the cowherd women created by Yogamaya did not have any sexual conduct with their husbands. As Yogamaya is a transcendental energy, her effects must all be eternal and spiritual. Since there was a complete absence of material Maya, even the replica devotees remained by their husbands, though playing the role of wives, they were actually all spiritual entities. Playing the role of wives was their perfection in executing the will of Yogamaya. These wives manufactured by Yogamaya had absolutely no physical contact with their husbands. It would have been unfitting even for these replica devotees who have formed similar to the original gopis to be enjoyed by any other men. Therefore the verse says, Swaparsvastan, the gopis who were standing by their sides rather than the gopis who were in their own beds. Yogamaya personally reconciled everything and ensured that their husbands never experienced any lust for them. When the real gopis returned to their individual homes after the rasa dance, Yogamaya made the replica devotees disappear. So then the question is also asked, well, the gopis, who were they married to? Now this becomes somewhat confusing to understand this point. Or, as even in the Vidugdha Madhava, Yogamaya Purnamasi Devi assures Brinda Devi that actually don't worry, they're not going to get married to anyone else, the gopis, because Brinda Devi was so upset thinking that these gopis who loved only Krishna were going to be married to other men. And she said, don't worry about it, they're not actually ever going to get married. So it can be said that the gopis are not really married to any other man. And indeed, Narada Muni, I've heard it said, that Narada Muni, when he views Braja pastimes, he sees that actually there are no husbands there at all. But the gopis clearly see that there are husbands there. So which are there there? Which are there? Are there husbands or not husbands? So here Vishwanath takes the point of view, there are husbands, which raises the question, well, who are those husbands? But there are husbands and they're satisfied by Yogamaya. But Narada Muni sees no husbands. And the gopis see husbands. So again, that point comes up. Well, if there are in fact, as seen by Narada Muni, no husbands, which seems to be an answer or a vision more full of knowledge, and that contradicts the vision of the gopis, well, what are we supposed to see? What are we supposed to see? So the answer, again, is from the tattva point of view, it may be one thing, and then from the rasa point, it's something completely different. So which one are we supposed to see? And the answer is very simple. If we are meant ultimately to follow in the footsteps of the gopis, we see with the vision that the gopis see. Yet we also know tattva. And to the question, well, who are those husbands? Anyway, if they're there. So, I don't think Shastra speaks about this very much. One might be led to think that these are the gopis that are growing up, who are Krishna's friends, and they're married. This is what it appears like from the descriptions, and they're married to the gopis, and Krishna's dancing with the wives of others in the middle of night of his friends. He's playing with them in the daytime and dancing with their wives at night. Is that what's going on? Is Krishna such a person? But before we all get up in arms, we should understand that Krishna reconciles everything. and it's not like that. Exactly what it is like is very hard to understand, at least by me. Maybe someone else can say some shastra on these points. But Yogamaya, as we heard, she satisfies everyone. And the dealings of that realm are different from the dealings of this realm. Would anyone... And it's not the mundane emotions that we would like to sort of project upon what's happening in Goloka Vrindavan. They simply do not exist there. Does anyone have anything on that one? Anyone know anything about that they would like to? So that's a particular area that I don't have access to. So I've since the question does come up, I've explained it to the little bit of my understanding. Yeah.
There is the explanation given that during the year, during the Brahma Mahara Purnima,
yes,
is at that time the gopis are married.
Yes.
And so they actually married Krishna. He was in the form of all his gopis,
You come into a problem from the other side with that way. Why are those ladies who are married to Krishna living with these other people? So it can't be exactly like that. I mean, but it's somewhere between the rasa and the tattva side. From the tattva side, there are no husbands. It's just the conception. And from the rasa side, there are husbands. There are husbands. Otherwise, there could not be the flavor of Purakya Ras. But because Jiva Goswami, for his own purposes, tends to take the point they are married to Krishna. But anyway, that's a whole another angle on things. Okay, did you want to say anything else on this? Does anyone?
There's something that Vallabhacharya says. He says that they were not very advanced devotees, those husbands. But Madhvacharya says many things that don't quite concur with what we understand.
Yeah. Balavacharya. Yeah.
Like he said, he describes how Krishna was purifying Nanda Maharaj, Yashoda, and so forth.
Yeah.
So it doesn't seem that we concur with our understanding.
No. Or what he's saying doesn't exactly portray the depths of what he wants to say, or something like that.
Okay. So that issue aside, let's go on to 38 and then conclude with 39. After an entire night of Brahma had passed, Lord Krishna advised the gopis to return to their homes. Although they did not wish to do so, the Lord's beloved consorts complied with his commands. So Krishna, he's acting like an ordinary boy, and things in some senses don't add up to ordinary mundane vision. But then there is elements of Aishwarya, of Krishna's position and potency in there, such as he danced with the gopis for a night of Brahma, which is thousands and thousands and millions of years. So that doesn't at all fit into the mundane conception. So we remember again that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the all-powerful Supreme Personality of Godhead, and things really don't have to make full sense to our mundane, finite intelligence, because everything is reconciled by Krishna in the most wonderful way. We'll just read a little from this. We'll read actually the purport here. In the Bhagavad Gita 8:17, Lord Krishna explains, by human calculation, 1,000 ages taken together is the duration of Brahma's one day. And such also is the duration of his night. Thus 1,000 ages entered within a single 12-hour night when Lord Krishna performed his rasa dance. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur compares this inconceivable compression of time to the fact that many universes fit neatly within the 40-mile range of earthly Vrindavan. Or one may consider that Mother Yasoda could not encircle the small abdomen of child Krishna with numerous ropes, and that at another time, Krishna manifested many universes within his mouth. The transcendence of spiritual reality above and beyond mundane physics is concisely explained in Srila Rupa Goswami Lago Bhagavatamrita. Evam prabhu priyanam cha damnas cha samayasya cha avichintya prabhavatvad atrakinchit nadurgatam. Nothing is impossible for the Lord. Nothing is impossible for the Lord. His dear devotees, his transcendental abode, or the time of his pastimes. And that's the ultimate reconciliation of things, that Krishna somehow works things out, or his Yogamaya works things out, so that everything is reconciled. For all these entities, the Lord, his dear devotees, his abode, or time within his pastimes, are inconceivably powerful. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti further explains that the word Vasudeva Namo Ditaha indicates that Lord Krishna advised the gopis, to assure the success of these pastimes, you and I should keep them secret. The word Vasudeva, a name of Krishna, also indicates Lord Krishna's plenary expansion, who acts as the presiding deity of consciousness. Hare Krishna. When the word Vasudeva is understood in this context, the word Vasudeva Anumodita indicates that the presiding deity of consciousness, Vasudeva, manifested embarrassment and fear of their elders within the gopis' hearts, and therefore it was only with great reluctance that the young girls returned home. Because they were with Krishna. How is it possible for them to leave Krishna's association at this most intimate time, which fulfilled all their transcendental desires? How is it possible for them to leave? So the Lord himself, in his form as Vasudev, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains, put a particular sentiment within the heart of the gopis. And that sentiment of fear and embarrassment, fear of embarrassment and fear and embarrassment, it caused the Leela, this wonderful Rasa Leela pastime, to break, to end, leaving everyone all the gopis. How many gopis were described as being there? Plus one Krishna feeling the deepest of separation. And then the final verse, which is a very, very famous verse, a very important verse. I'll read that. Vikrilitam vajavadubiridam ca vishnu sradhanvito anasruyad atavanayadya bhaktim param bhagavati pratilabhyakamam vidrogamasu apinotiyacharena dhira. Anyone who faithfully hears or describes the Lord's playful affairs with the young gopis of Vrindavan will attain the Lord's pure devotional service. Thus he will quickly become sober and conquer lust, the disease of the heart. I'll read the purport, then I'm going to read Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comment, and then I'll speak about a bit about and read how Prabhupada took this. And also Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Prabhupada took this mood, followed the mood of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So again, I'll read the verse. Anyone who faithfully hears or describes the Lord's playful affairs with the young gopis of Vrindavan will attain the Lord's pure devotional service. So just by hearing and describing it, one will attain Krishna's service. Pure devotional service. Thus he will quickly become sober and conquer lust, the disease of the heart. So this implies that the hearing is still being done while lust remains in the heart. And the result of the hearing of Krishna's pastimes, and this is somewhat an answer, Sukadeva Goswami's answer to, and you're listening to these things? Well, these points, this pastime of Krishna that we're describing here is so powerful, he's saying, that not only doesn't it contaminate, he says, but even if there is contamination in the heart, quickly that contamination, the vidrogam, the lust, the disease of the heart, the selfishness, the improper desires, they will be conquered and removed. So that's how powerful these pastimes are. And that's the final verse in the chapter. And let's read the purport and then we'll read some other things. Today we shall go a little late. The extraordinary power of Lord Krishna's conjugal pastimes is clearly revealed here. And also there was an indication of this in a previous purport and verse. Qualitatively, the Lord's spiritual loving pastimes are the diametric opposite of material lusty affairs. So much so, simply by hearing about the Lord's pastimes, a devotee conquers sex desire. By reading pornographic literature or hearing about mundane romance, we certainly do not conquer sex desire, but rather increase our lust. But hearing or reading about the Lord's conjugal affairs has exactly the opposite effect because they are of the opposite nature. Being purely spiritual. Therefore, it is by the causeless mercy of Lord Krishna that he exhibits his rasa-lila within this world. If we become attached to this narration, we will experience the bliss of spiritual love, and thus reject the perverted reflection of that love, which is called lust. As nicely put by Lord Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, param drisvana vartite, once having directly experienced the Supreme, one will not return to material pleasures. Now here is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comments on this, and he makes the point of the power of these pastimes. He makes it so strongly. One who hears and chants about Krishna's rasa-lila, which is the crest jewel of all pastimes, gets the crest jewel of all results, namely Krishna Prema, Bhaktim Param. One who continuously hears Anusrunayat glorifies or writes poetry, Varnayat describes, about this autumnal, the autumn Rasalila. This is the Vamsivat Rasalila that took place here. It's done in the Sarat season, the autumn season. And similar pastimes of Krishna described by other poets. First of all, even if he has the heart disease of material lust, he becomes filled, imbued with prema. Then, by the effect of prema, by that taste, by that powerful prema, then, by its effects, prema's effects, the disease of the heart is destroyed, lust is removed. Thus, it is understood here that this prema is independent. It is not weak or dependent like jnana yoga. Here, kaman rogam refers to the heart disease of material lust. When the word is used in relation to Krishna, however, this meaning is excluded. There is no lust in Krishna's dealings whatsoever. In relationship to Krishna kamam, because that's the words in the verse, it is prema, means pure love, and it has the opposite effect of material lust, kaman. So one who faithfully hears and glorifies Krishna's rasa dance is described as learned, dhira pandita, for he does not foolishly doubt how can Krishna prema appear if material lust is present. Krishna prema will definitely appear in that person who is devoid of foolishness, dhira, who is sober, and who accepts the statements of scripture with full faith. However, Krishna prema will not appear within those who have no faith in Krishna or who offend Krishna's holy name. The divine rasa-lila is like the loving smile of the intimate devotee of Krishna, who is victorious and glorified for his ability to conquer Krishna by his pure love. The divine rasa-lila is like the loving smile of the intimate devotee of Krishna, who is victorious and glorified for his ability to conquer Krishna by his pure love. He's victorious in conquering Krishna, and he's glorified for that, for his ability to conquer Krishna by his pure love. So a very, very powerful, very, very strong and straightforward comment by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur that describes and pushes us to read and hear and glorify these wonderful pastimes. And Prabhupada said, it is not that we have a ban on the gopis. Now, I would like to read two sections from Chaitanya Charitamrita, where one of them here, this verse, Vikriditam Vrajavadubhir Idam Cha Vishnu, was quoted in the purport during the conversation between Ramananda Roy and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked Ramananda Roy, out of all topics that people listen to, which is the best for all living entities? And Ramananda Roy replied, hearing about the loving affairs between Radha and Krishna is most pleasing to the ear. Prabhupada's purport. According to Srimad Bhagavatam 10:33-40, Vikriditam Vrajavadubhir Idam Javishnu Shvadan Vito Anasunayat Ato Ata Varnayat Ya Bhaktim Param Bhagavati Patilabhyakamam Vidrogam Asu Apanoti Acharena Dhira. He who faithfully hears about the dealings between Lord Krishna and the gopis in the rasa dance, and he who describes these activities, attained to the perfectional stage of devotional service and simultaneously lose material lusty desires. Prabhupada's purport continues. When one is liberated and hears of Lord Krishna and Radha's loving affairs, he is not inclined to have lusty desires. A person who is liberated and hears.
One mundane rogue once said that when the Vaishnavas chant the name Radha Radha or Radhe Radhe, he simply remembers a barber's wife named Radha. This is a practical example. So Prabhupada's idea glorified these pastimes of Krishna and hearing about them and chanting about them, but also included the practical, born out of practical reality. This, he said, is a practical example. Unless one is liberated, he should not try to hear about the loving affairs between Radha and Krishna. He should not make that his steady diet, Prabhupada is saying. Unless one is liberated, he should not try to hear about the loving affairs between Radha and Krishna. If one is not liberated and listens to a relation of the rasa dance, he may remember his mundane activities and illicit connections with some women whose name may also be Radha. In the conditioned stage, one should not even try to remember such things. By practicing the regulative principles, so the stress that Prabhupada gives and gave is this practical point that we don't want these transcendental activities that have nothing to do with mundane lust to cause mundane lust due to our experiences of the reflection of this pure entity. We don't want these mundane experiences to arise in the heart because that can cause these things to inflame and therefore can cause fall down. So this Prabhupada's point is Prabhupada's making here. By practicing the regulative principles, one should rise to the platform of spontaneous attraction for Krishna. This is the purpose of practicing the vidhis. Srila Jiva Goswami describes in Bhakti Sandarbha that Raganuga Bhakti, which is the path taught by Mahaprabhu and which is ultimately the Abhideya Tattva, the practice, the process of attaining Krishna, Krishna's service in Vrindavan, that should be, can be and should be supported by Vaidhi if it is not mature. So once, by practicing the regulative principles, the vidhis, one should rise to the platform of spontaneous attraction for Krishna. Then and only then should one hear about the Radha Krishna Leela. Although these affairs may be very pleasing both to conditioned and liberated souls, the conditioned souls should not try to hear them, to make an endeavor only to focus their consciousness on this, because the result may not be very good. The talks between Ramananda Roy and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu were conducted on the platform of liberation. Another. What section of Chaitanya Charitamrita? It was in the talk, this conversation between Ramananda Roy and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Do you want the exact verse number? Or you can tell, if you're using the computer, just look up that Vikriditam verse. It's in a purport. And here, a direct quotation of that verse. Let's see. This is in when Ramananda Roy is instructing Pradyumna Misra. Mahaprabhu is telling Pradyumna Misra wants to hear about Rasa Katha. And he tells him to go to speak to Ramananda Roy. So, this is text in Adi Antilila, chapter 5, 45 through 46. So he's talking about Ramananda Roy. Mahaprabhu is talking about Ramananda Roy's
incredible, literally meaning not one is not able to understand or believe it, penetrate into the depths of it. His ability to deal on the spiritual level with these young Devidasis of the temple, and which has caused Pradyumna Misra some doubts. So Mahaprabhu says, he speaks, and it's more or less it's explaining the same meaning of this Vikritam verse. Mahaprabhu says, when one hears or describes with great faith the pastimes of Lord Krishna, but this is Bengali, such as his rasa dance with the gopis, the disease of lusty desires in his heart, and the agitation caused by the three modes of material nature are immediately nullified, and he becomes sober and silent. These are the words of Mahaprabhu. This is text 46 and 7. And here's Prabhupada's... I'll read the few verses that we have here to read, and then I'll read Prabhupada's purport there. Tasting the transcendental effulgent, sweetly ecstatic love of Krishna. This is Mahaprabhu describing what love of Krishna. Tasting the transcendental effulgent, sweetly ecstatic love of Krishna. Such a person can enjoy life 24 hours a day in the transcendental bliss of the sweetness of Krishna's pastimes. And the Mahaprabhu himself quotes the Vikritam Vrajavadubhiridamsa Vishnu verse. A transcendentally sober person who with faith and love continuously hears from a realized soul about the activities of Lord Krishna in his rasa dance with the gopis, or one who describes such activities, can attain full transcendental devotional service at the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus lusty material desires, which are the heart disease of all materialistic persons, are for him quickly and completely vanquished. If a transcendentally situated person, ye shune ye pade tanra fal itadrasi, se bhagavata vishta se ye seve arha nishta nishi, tanre fala ki kaimu kahane nayaya, Nitya siddhe se praya siddha tanrikaya. Mahaprabhu's words again. If a transcendentally situated person, following in the footsteps of Srila Rupa Goswami, hears and speaks about the rasa lila dance of Krishna, and is always absorbed in thoughts of Krishna while serving the Lord day and night within his mind, what shall I say about the results? If it is so spiritually exalted that it cannot be expressed in words. Let me read that again. If a transcendentally situated person, Bhava Vishta, always absorbed in thoughts of Krishna, following in the footsteps of Srila Rupa Goswami, this again is Prabhupada's translation, hears and speaks about the Rasa Lila dance of Krishna, and is always absorbed in thoughts of Krishna, while serving the Lord day and night within his mind, what shall I say about the results, Mahaprabhu says? It is so spiritually exalted that it cannot be expressed in words. Such a person is an eternally liberated associate of the Lord, and his body is completely spiritualized. Although he is visible to material eyes, he is spiritually situated, and all his activities are spiritual. By the will of Krishna, such a devotee is understood to possess a spiritual body. So he's describing Ramananda Roy. Now let me read Prabhupada's purport to the earlier verse.
Please read the verse again.
Which one?
The one you can read the
purport. Yes. It's more or less a Bengali translation of the Vikritatiya verse, the Sanskrit verse. When one hears or describes, this is text 46 in chapter 8, Chapter 5 of Antilila. When one hears or describes with great faith the pastimes of Lord Krishna, such as his rasa dance with the gopis, the disease of lusty desires in his heart, and the agitation caused by the three modes of material nature are immediately nullified, and he becomes sober and silent. Purport. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur comments in this connection. Any person can any person seriously inclined to hear about the pastimes of Krishna's rasa dance, as mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam, with great faith and a transcendental, spiritually inspired mind, is immediately freed from the natural lusty desires found within the heart of a materialistic man. So there's a seriously inclined, great faith, with a transcendental, spiritually inspired mind. He is immediately freed from natural lusty desires found within the heart of a materialistic man. Very different from the little story that Prabhupada told about Radha the barber's wife. When one's mind is not at all transcendentally inspired, it is practical. That if one is going to, if the things that one reads in Krishna's dealing, if one allows one's mind to follow the path of its lust and mundane experience, then the result will be obvious, because the mind is not transcendentally inspired. When a pure Vaishnava speaks on Srimad Bhagavatam, and another pure Vaishnava hears Srimad Bhagavatam from such a self-realized, from such a realized soul, both of them live in the transcendental world where the contamination of the modes of material nature cannot touch them. Freed from the contamination of the modes of nature, the speaker and hearer are fixed in a transcendental mentality, knowing that their position on the transcendental platform is to serve the Supreme Lord. And this is specifically the intervention, what the false ego does to keep one in the material world. It intervenes, pushing the mind, it intervenes, pushing one to adopt an enjoying mood. This is specifically the job of the false ego. Specifically, Ishwaraham aham bhogi siddham balavan sukhi. And this, there's no accident that this is the Krishna's description of demoniac qualities, not just innocent qualities, demoniac qualities, because to try to enjoy that which is enjoyable, meant for Krishna's pleasure, is indeed demoniac. And that is specifically what the false ego does. That's what its job is. To make us, to inspire our lusty thoughts so that we conceive of ourselves as the enjoyer, and we look upon the material world as if its purpose is meant for us to enjoy. As objects, we look on people and things. Everything is simply an object for the inspired, materially false ego inspired mind to enjoy. So if we are seriously inclined to hear these subjects, if we are seriously inclined to taste what is our inheritance, we should be seriously inclined to not inflame our natural false ego-inspired mind and tendencies. And we should be seriously inclined to purify our consciousness. And then, when we see the impurities in our consciousness, and when we see the sparks, experience the sparks of gross materialism through our polluted consciousness, trying to push its way into these pristine and pure spiritual pastimes which are not at all tinged by lust, and we see this, we can lament very severely, because this is what's keeping us from moving forward in our spiritual life. We can lament severely, and also we can become very, very humble. So in one sense, we have all just gone through a a very rarefied experience where in some ways like a very interesting test also, because at different times perhaps we got glimpses of where of the weaknesses within our own consciousness and our and no one else knew. So we have an opportunity to become deeply humble inside, if this was part of our experience as we read these wonderful and heard these wonderful chapters, the smiling face of Krishna, the essence of the Bhagavatam. And we have a chance to become humble and prayerful and know how much we actually depend on mercy. And that will cause great benefit to arise also from hearing. So there's the people who are completely materialistic, who should just completely keep away from these things, because they'll say, "What? Why do you worship God? A God who dances with the wives of others? No tattva, neither tattva nor rasa. Just materialistic consciousness and materialistic conceptions." There's those people who, and then there's the people who are completely pure, who can read this all day long and live on this platform all day long, and then there's the souls somewhere in between who have aspirations that are higher than their capacity, and they should be careful, and they should proceed carefully, and they should become very, very humble and prayerful and very dependent on mercy. So proceed with caution. Proceed. We must proceed. This is our goal. But proceed with caution and care. We'll continue with the purport. So what sparked that talking was the Prabhupada's words. Knowing that their position on the transcendental platform is to serve the Supreme Lord. Such a simple sentence. Such a simple sentence. Freed from the contamination of the modes of material nature, the speaker and hearer are fixed in the transcendental mentality, knowing that their position on the transcendental platform is to serve the Supreme Lord. But very deep in meaning. Knowing that their position is to serve the Lord, the Supreme Lord, with great devotion, with prema. And then, by catching a glimpse, and even those who are catching a glimpse of the prema-filled mentality of the gopis and how it controls Krishna, then perhaps one little spark of that can enter our hearts and our desire can increase. And we'll want to go there and not want to be in the material world and lament every material contamination we have and decry it and chant seriously and chant prayerfully and chant attentively and associate properly and not commit offenses and be fearful of offenses that travel with us from life after life after life and become humble and become humble and chant and take shelter of the holy names. So a simple sentence with lots of meaning. So now, contrary to this type of person who is qualified to hear, the class known as Prakriti Sahajiyas, who consider the transcendental pastimes of Lord Krishna something like the behavior between a man and a woman in the material world, field, artificially thinking that hearing the Rasa Lila will help them by diminishing the lusty desires of their diseased hearts. But because they do not follow the regulative principles, but instead violate even ordinary morals, their contemplation of Rasa Lila is a futile, useless attempt, which sometimes results in their imitating the dealings of the gopis and Lord Krishna. To forbid such habits of the Prakriti Sahajiyas, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has excluded their material intelligence by using the word vishvas, and as the word in the Vikriti Tam verse, shraddha dan vito,
with faith. The faith of the Vaishnava is not of the material world. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that faith is the Bhakti Lata Beej. It is a gift. It is a taste. It is a gift. So Vishwas, Mahaprabhu uses, and Shraddha, it must be there. That taste, that desire must be there. In Srimad Bhagavatam 10.33.31, Srila Sukadeva Goswami says, Naitat samachale jatu manasapi yanishvara. We just read this. Vinasyati acharan modhyan yatarudho abhijam visham. Certainly, one who is not the Supreme Personality of Godhead should never, even within his mind, imitate the activities of the transcendental rasa lila of Krishna. So here, an unequivocal, very strong warning. Don't think about these things with oneself as the enjoyer. Unequivocal. Don't try to say, oh, Krishna did very well. If out of ignorance one does so, he will be destroyed. Just as if he were to imitate Lord Shiva, who drank poison produced from the ocean. It is courting certain death, spiritual death. Now, just a little bit more. Just one other part of one lecture Prabhupada gave in Mayapur. I had a bunch of them, but this one sums it up. This is in Vrindavan, 1976, speaking about five Bhagavatam, fifth canto, in the fifth canto, fifth chapter, ninth verse. Sometimes we go to hear or see Rasalila, meaning the Rasalila dramas, here in Vrindavan. But unless we are advanced in spiritual consciousness, this hearing of or seeing some Rasalila, sometimes it brings us down. If one is actually seeing Rasalila, the result will be Vidroga Kamam Apanotya Charena Dhira. This is the injunction that was from the Vikriditam verse. This is the injunction of Srimad Bhagavatam. If one has actually heard from a realized person about Vikriditam, Idam, Vrajavadubhir, Vishnu and Vrajavadu, the gopis, Vikriditam, their Leela, their pastimes, Shradan Vita Anasrinayad Ata Vanayedya. One who is actually advanced in spiritual consciousness, Shradan Vita Anasrinayad, and hears from the realized person. Anu means parampara, not from ordinary persons, professional reciters, but from a realized person. The result will be Rid Roga Kamam Apenoti. Then our natural lusty desires will disappear. That is the result. But in spite of disappearing this lusty desire, if we increase our lusty desire, that means we are spoiling our life. Therefore it is forbidden that neophyte students, they should not indulge in these affairs of Rasalila. You should be very careful. People are very much accustomed to see Rasalila in Vrindavan. Maybe they are advanced, but the test is whether he has given up his lusty desire. That is the test. If he has given up, then after seeing Rasalila, he should not have to return home. My Guru Maharaj used to say, do not go to Vrindavan with return ticket. So therefore, it is very confidential. There are 10 cantos in Bhagavatam. 9 cantos are devoted to understand Krishna. 9 cantos. Then the 10th canto begins. Then Krishna's birth and pastimes are mentioned there. So we should not jump over the 10th canto all of a sudden. People are very much anxious to jump over to the 10th canto. No. 10th canto is Mukaravind. It is the face of Krishna, smiling. But Krishna worship begins from the lotus feet of Krishna. No one offers flowers and tulsi on the face of Krishna. They offer on the feet. That is the beginning. The first and second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, two lotus feet.
So we have to go by and by. And when we are actually experienced devotional servant, then you should try to understand the 10th canto. This is the way. Otherwise, there may be fall down, as this Ajamil felt down. He was a neophyte, and as soon as he saw the Sudra and Sudrani embracing, he became victimized. So, that mood is not a surprise to anyone who's following Prabhupada. But yet we should. We should advance, otherwise we won't be happy and satisfied. So let us help ourselves and help each other become devotees. Okay. We're all very, very patient. And thank you very much.